Scientific Imagination is part of the Future-Based platform. My name is Sabine Winters. For more information, visit scientificimagination.org.
So my guest of today is Jamal Aghili. He's a German photographer and video artist based between Frankfurt and Amsterdam. Making use of photography and the cinema, he worked on commissions for various clients worldwide. Jamal is selected artist for the Moon Gallery, the first exhibition on the moon, and recently published his first book, Terms and Conditions. Jamal, welcome to this podcast series.
Thank you very much. Lovely introduction.
Thank you. Well, we met on Instagram, actually. I created a post that I wanted to talk with everyone involved with space research and astrophysics, and you tagged two colleagues.
Exactly, Sabrina and Charlotte.
Yes.
My wonderful colleagues.
Yes. How did you get to know each other?
Well, we got to know each other through ESA and the Euromoon Mars working group, and we've been working together now for 2 years and continue to collaborate. Right now we are preparing the Chill Ice mission in Iceland, which will happen in August, where the goal is to have a group of researchers building up a habitat lava tube in Iceland and simulating how it will be to live on the moon. They are trying to prove the concept, how to build up a habitat within 8 hours of time. Be really realistic when you arrive there on the moon. And this is how we got to know each other.
Wow. And what's your role in this project?
In this project, I'm also part of the core team. And as I'm, of course, a photographer, my role is the outreach, the photography and film part of it. Because this project, now we do on a smaller scale. And to communicate it properly, not through abstracts for science conferences, but also to have really nice visuals. I joined the team to document the experiments and document how the whole campaign will be, and at the end, make a wonderful short movie and a photo series about that.
Yeah, wonderful. What was your biggest motivation to follow this path throughout your study and career? You're still studying also, right?
Exactly, yes. So at the moment, I'm studying photography at the Royal Academy of Arts in The Hague.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest motivation, that's a tough one. I've been thinking about this actually quite a lot, because I'm doing photography now for about 11, 12 years. And I can just give you the most honest and simple answer is that, yeah, I decided to do photography in my life because I love life so much. And for me, photography is, and in general, visuals is just the most intense way of experiencing the world for me. Having the patience to look at the world and then actually making an image out of it, for me, it's just the highest feeling possible. And when I finished high school, I had the decision, okay, should I go, let's say, in the sciences? Renewable energy was something that was really intriguing for me. But photography was really, and is still really, where my heart is. And there I decided, okay, what I do at the moment with photography, there's much more to explore. There's a world out there which I have to get to know and have to get out of my small village. And this is why I came to the Netherlands and started studying. And eventually during this study, I got in connection with ESA and figured out this is a really interesting environment to work in. And also the people are highly motivated, really enthusiastic, sometimes really nerdy. And this is what I love. They're really passionate about what they do. And that's eventually one of the reasons why I got into making scientific, I wouldn't call it scientific photography, but photography for science and technology.
At the moment, you are really focusing also on astrophotography, right? For example, you are a selected artist for the Moon Gallery. How did you get enrolled in such a project?
Well, that's a long story. Eventually, because I had a project idea that was worth sending to the moon, and I applied for this, and through ESA, we also got to know each other personally, and people saw my love for space and astronomy, and the idea behind it was intriguing that I was eventually selected. And at the moment, I'm still in the developing phase of the artwork. So to put it in a nutshell, what the Moon Gallery is. The Moon Gallery is a project with a goal to bring the first art exhibition to the moon. And this will happen by 2025, maybe earlier. Let's see how it goes. But essentially, don't think of an art exhibition like in a white space in some museum, because that's the whole idea of the Moon Gallery, that it's a miniature gallery. So it's a grid 10 on 10 centimeters. It's divided in 100 units, which are all one cubical centimeter, where 100 artists can participate, send their miniature artworks. And this small gallery is mounted on the exterior of lunar landing unit, which will then touch down on the surface of the moon and stay there forever, which is really exciting. And the idea is that, okay, we plant the first cultural and artistic seed for a new generation of explorers as a pre-stage for getting to the moon, because it's actually a really tricky job. We already have a sort of test run to the International Space Station, which will happen in February next year, so in 2022, where a smaller selection of the artworks will go on a resupply mission, a cargo mission to the ISS, will be mounted by the astronauts there in one of the modules and stay there for about half a year.
Oh my God. I think it's so exciting. I think it's so really exciting. Yeah. And it's fantastic that just art plays such an important role when it comes to imagining alternatives, exploring futures and unknown environments, right?
Exactly. Art in space has actually already a long and really rich history. There are already artworks on the moon. There's already an artwork on Mars, which was brought there.
Really?
Yes, on Mars. There is, for example, an artwork, which was a collaboration between NASA and artists, where they were really thinking pragmatically in terms of, okay, the space we have going to Mars is, and the resources we have is even much smaller than going to the moon or bringing something in low Earth orbit. So what they did is they made a rather abstract painting of small dots, which were used to calibrate the camera. Mm-hmm. So you have the artistic vision and the scientific use both in one part. And this will also be done for the moon gallery that we have. We use the resources we have efficiently and for camera calibration and see how the colors of the artwork turn out to be visible in space and how are they visible on Earth. Yeah, there's much, much more. Like, you could do a whole podcast episode on art and space, but it's really an exciting topic. And I think what is happening right now in the space sector is something, it's a new age that is beginning, and there's lots of enthusiasm and motivation. You can almost call it the gold rush even. It's a really exciting time to live in.
Yeah, it definitely is. Let's go back to your profession, photography and cinema. So it's a very broad question. It's a very big question, but think of the function of imagination in astrophotography. Mm-hmm. How would you describe it?
Yes. So the role of imagination in astrophotography, I see first as a rather practical. Mm-hmm. So as photographers and image makers, we talk about pre-visualization, which is a tool mostly used in my work. So to be able to imagine, for example, let's say you put your telescope on a location. First, you have to know where on Earth you're located. Then you have to know what you want to photograph. You have to imagine the location of the object in the sky, because most deep sky objects, as amateur astronomers call it, so this is all, these are galaxies, star clusters and nebula. They're too faint to pick up with the naked eye and even sometimes with a telescope. So you have to totally rely on your imagination, and you have to trust your research and the data where this object is located. And besides that, you have to interpret weather patterns and imagine how the clouds will be, how the seeing will be, when is the sunrise, how do I have to set up the telescope, because we work with portable telescopes that you can get the most exposure time. And even there with the exposure time, because we work with a method called stacking. Mm-hmm. And in this case is that you use several, sometimes 100 exposures and put them on top of each other to get a combined exposure time of several hours. So you do small, tiny exposures of a couple of minutes, and then later in the post-processing, you combine them. There you can also imagine, looking at a single exposure, how eventually the final result will look like. So for example, if you photograph a galaxy, you can't really, let's say, resolve especially the outer parts of a galaxy, which are really, really faint and really hard to pick up even with a longer exposure. You have to imagine, okay, how do I have to select my exposure time that I get all the details out of it? And mm-hmm. this is the the practical part, let's say, where imagination comes into play.
So you already mentioned how this interaction between imagination and scientific photography works. What's the difference between scientific photography and astrophotography as you do it?
Let's first think about the painting the bigger picture, because yeah, besides all of this technical part and the artistic part of taking pictures of nature and astronomy, for me it has a really personal connection to it. And my friends sometimes like to joke about me that some people go to church, some go into the mosque, and I just do my astrophotography because I like this thought experiment of putting myself very consciously into a very sublime experience. And for me, their technology is, I don't want to say my church, but it's definitely a tool that helps me to interact with the universe in this way. Because to think about how long the photons have to travel to even reach my sensor, and that it actually works, that you have a CCD sensor that has all these millions of pixels where the photon is converted into an electrical signal. This is for me something pretty amazing. When you're sitting out there alone at night and checking the telescope that everything works, you have lots of time to just look up and you think like, oh, we're living in a pretty amazing world. And it's pretty amazing that you can capture all of this, even if you, let's say, only photograph Andromeda, let's say, which is really close by. Still, it has to travel 2.5 million years to even get here. So all of this is something which is really hard to convey in photographs. And I'm they're also still in a process of searching and finding solutions for that. Because let's say the average Joe, they will see, like, okay, it's a space picture. And we are already so influenced, let's say, by the abundance of Hubble pictures that you're like, yeah, it's some computer rendition. Probably it's not real. This is a question I get a lot. Is it even real?
The question, is this even real? I can really imagine that people ask you that question because your pictures, they seem just out of a fairy tale.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So, for example, the relation between imagination and photography when it comes to interpreting observations, right?
Yes.
When is it art? When is it science? When is it reality? When it's fiction?
Yes, it's an amazing question. And I also love to debate and speak about this. And eventually a part of my thesis will also be about this, because earlier I said that I wouldn't call myself a scientific photographer, because what does science or like a scientific approach actually mean? So you have a thesis, you have an experiment, and you try to prove it. But I don't make pictures for school textbook, right? I want to make pictures that go beyond the obvious and the explanatory and the literal, at least I try to. And to, let's say, create wonderment and excitement that you're like, oh, I want to know the story behind all of this. But sometimes there are heated debates online whether something is real or not. What are the true colors of something? What is, let's say, kitsch? People don't like oversaturated things. And in this discussion, I'm sort of the outside spectator. I am in lots of online groups, and I'm rather the guy that has a bit of popcorn and watches the people fight over it. But I have a slightly different approach. Or like when you want to talk about real data, I want to be realistic and say none of these people, including me, produces any real data. We produce aesthetic pictures. And this is also a nice recommendation I would have for reading. It's from Elizabeth Kessler, the Hubble Space Telescope and the Astronomical Sublime. It's a really nice essay in which she explores the connection between romantic imagery, Hubble Space Telescope pictures, and essentially the point she is making, these pictures, they're edited in a way that it's for science communication purposes. So it's not for any scientific observations. So what these scientists do is they take these images and edit them in a way that it's very appealing for the public, very interesting to look at. And yeah, the point in the essay, which is really explained well, is that she says that even these astronomers, besides, of course, wanting to secure future funding for another space telescope missions that you actually show the public, okay, there is some real aesthetic gain. Even these astronomers, they are also biased in their visual language, because there's a tendency of all of these pictures, what do they like? They want to create a sublime experience by looking at the space. And there are actually patterns like high contrast, high saturation, really epic, almost meteorological, so that it reminds you of clouds here on Earth or geologic formations. If you look, for example, at the Pillars of Creation, a famous Hubble picture of the Eagle Nebula, that it's so unreal. And when you zoom in, especially, is this even real? And then you'll get this sublime experience. And this is essentially what these pictures try to convey, and not scientific correctness of that. So like, to summarize it, I would say I'm really rather open-minded when it comes to interpreting the colors. Also, I know, or like when I look at the picture, or like when I look also at other pictures, it's always the result of this specific equipment. So this specific camera with this specific weather conditions, and of course the personal style of the photographer. And this is also with the Hubble Legacy Group, as well as with the amateur astronomers. So everyone is biased, and it's always a subjective render of reality. And this is also what makes it so exciting, because essentially everyone creates their own reality with their equipment. And this is something I really find interesting, because you will never know what the space actually looked like, because you're always biased by the technology you used to observe.
That's a wonderful answer. Could you then say, because we're all biased, could you say that the boundaries of what reality is, what fiction is, are really blurry? So the line between science and artistic impressions in astrophotography are really blurry as well. And we are projecting maybe wishful thinking on deep space objects.
Yes, the wishful thinking is a very, very interesting way to put it, because also Kessler, in her essay, she makes the point that we are all eventually so influenced by the art historical context, let's say here, us as Europeans or Westerners, we are so influenced by romantic imagery and what nature should look like, especially because we are, let's say, we live in a highly industrialized nations, and therefore we have a particular image what nature should look like, and also what space should look like, to get us back into that, yeah, as I said, this sublime experience, and that you really experience the pure nature, let's say.
Fantastic. And you told me that you want to know the story behind all of it. And for the project Terms and Conditions, which is the name of your book, you focus on the physical sources of the invisible networks that uphold the internet or technology in general. Could you explain a little bit more about this project and how it is connected to astrophotography?
Yes, of course. So this is a small tryout project, the first publication. I really only with the edition of 50 to just tap into this world of making photo books and how to work with images. And essentially, it also came out of this situation in the corona pandemic that we all found ourselves in, being online constantly and having to rely on the internet. But because the internet is so abundant, it's nothing magical for us anymore. And for me, it's still magic that I can talk with someone in Australia and almost have no lag, or with you right now, we're doing a podcast and don't have to meet for this. And I thought, okay, let's look at the physical sources of the internet, either in the sky with internet satellites, or here on the ground with this debate of, for example, the 5G towers and all of these, all of the infrastructure that makes our communication even possible. I try to connect what is happening in space with the sort of geopolitical implications it will have in the future. And there I took a really particular example. It's the example of SpaceX Starlink project. If you look at the plans and the concept of SpaceX, what they are actually trying to do, what they want to achieve until 2030, the amount of satellites they want to put up. And so the Starlink satellites, you probably saw them already, and many, many people did as well, especially when they are being launched and they're still in a lower orbit. They're rather shiny. And I started observing them last summer. I thought, okay, let's work with this somehow. And this was a trial to connect, let's say, the observation of the sky with what is happening here on Earth, because I think in the future they will become more and more intertwined, and looking into space and how space itself will change is something really inspiring for me. And it's, I think, really worthwhile to dig even deeper than this first publication. It was a tryout.
So more projects coming, probably.
Exactly. Definitely. It's yeah. just the beginning.
So you stated that magic plays a role in drive to research. So what role does wonder play in your work in general? And how is wonderment associated with imagination for you?
Yes. So I think maybe wonderment, and that's maybe subjective, maybe wonderment is something that comes before imagination and is triggering imagination. I was thinking about it. Okay, what is, for example, the difference between curiosity and wonderment? And I think it's first it's wonderment. Wow, this is amazing. Even if it's just how a tree grew over time. And then you're curious. How did the tree, how was it being shaped? What happened over time? What did people eventually do with it? So you get curious. And then the imagination comes into play, like, okay, what could have happened? Or this and this and this. Maybe wonderment is the beginning of curiosity, and eventually also something I strive for in my work and my photographs, because I believe that to excite people and that they want to know the story behind the photograph, the visuals have to be so intriguing that your imagination is triggered, your curiosity is triggered, and you're like, oh, I have to know what is behind that. And I think wonder is the very beginning of it all. And therefore, my pictures also have a particular style. In photography, we call it eye candy. So eye candy is when something is really visually pleasing, intriguing, and it's almost sucking you in. And you can't really resist because it's so interesting to look at. And this is something I like to have in my pictures. And this ultimately creates wonderment, I think.
Well, I can tell you definitely accomplished that in your pictures.
Thank you.
And speaking about excitement and inspiration, imagination, do you have any recommendations or maybe exhibitions we should visit, or maybe books or series we should read or watch?
Oh, that's a good one. I already recommended the book of Elizabeth Kessler, Picturing the Cosmos. It's really interesting if you're into astronomy, visual culture, and art history. But what one of my favorite movies is by Alejandro Jodorowsky, The Holy Mountain, and it's a rather surreal movie and a spiritual journey of all the planets that are humanized in his story, that are looking for salvation on a spiritual journey. It sounds really absurd and abstract, but it's a wonderful movie that really triggers your imagination. You know, life is so much bigger than what we can see on the surface.
Wonderful. And where can we find your work?
You can find it on my Instagram, which is called Photo Ageli, so FOTO, and then my last name. I'm sure you will link it and stuff.
Absolutely.
And on my website, which is jamal-ageli.com.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much. And I'm already looking forward for your graduation exhibition.
Thank you very much. You're invited. Please come.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sabine. It was great talking to you.
For more information, links and show notes, visit scientificimagination.org. In the next podcast episode, I will go into conversation with Angelo Vermeulen. Angelo is a space researcher, biosystems engineer, biologist and artist. And in 2009, he co-founded SEEDS, Space Ecologies, Art and Design, an international transdisciplinary collective of artists, scientists, engineers and activists.